Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. This isn't just about money. This is about life. And now the host of the Power of the Purse podcast, Lynn S. Evans.
Hello and welcome to another Power of the Purse podcast. Today I have the honor of talking to Lynn about one of the chapters in her book. The chapter is titled No Fear About Being a Widow. And that's a very bold statement, Lynn. There's so much fear surrounding the loss of a loved one. Why did you title it this way?
For two reasons. First of all, because I know that there is, just innately, there is fear about being a widow because of the dramatic change that status creates in your life. The fact that you no longer have the, whether you were madly in love with them or you just kind of you cohabitated peacefully, maybe is the way to say it. Whatever it was, there was still that presence of another person in your life. And whether you would acknowledge it or not, you each had your different roles in that relationship. When you take that other person out of this equation, you have a significant loss. And it's not just the loss of someone you love, but it's the loss of a system, of a way to do things. And so there is great fear in that unknown, in addition to the emotional and psychological fears of being widowed, of being alone. So what I wanted to talk about in this chapter was some of the more practical things that you can do that would in some way minimize those fears. It's not going to take it away, but it kind of gives you some structure for how to get yourself through this. And probably the most critical time is the first year after the death of a spouse. So, and again, I started this chapter by acknowledging the fact that my mom, who is now no longer with us, but at the time I wrote the book, she was. And she had been widowed twice in her life. The first time, my father passed away when she was 52. And then secondly, she married a man. It's a wonderful love story. She married a man she had dated in high school. They met through a high school reunion. And within a year to a year and a half after that, they married. Each of them had lost their first spouse. So they had their marriage, that second marriage, lasted for almost 25 years. And it was a really wonderful marriage. They did many, many things together. They were both retired at that point, had a great life. And after my father passed the first time, my mom developed maybe some calluses, I think you might say, of how to deal with this. But even with all of that knowledge and having a daughter who's a financial advisor, she still had to go through the pain of the emotional loss of not having her spouse. It was very comforting to her to know that this other piece of it she didn't have to deal with because she knew I would take care of it. Well, that's nice if you have somebody like me in your world as a child or whatever. But in the absence of that, it's very difficult to try to do all of that and also grieve.
Right.
So I think the point is that if you can do something ahead of time, which may be confrontational to some people, may be upsetting the apple cart, but to even have a conversation like this, it can save you so much pain, so much confusion, so much overwhelm when something like this happens down the road. So my thought was, if women were a little bit smarter about how to broach this subject and then what questions to ask, it would make them far less concerned about something happening in the future where there is no spouse. Now, I'm not saying, too, that you need to be doing this on a deathbed either. But at the same time, it's nice when everybody's healthy and well and you have a good relationship to get involved in this conversation. It's a very difficult conversation for many couples, but it's one that you have to have.
Let's talk about how to begin the conversation. For our listeners who've been listening to Power of the Purse for a long time, Lynn has an extraordinary amount of experience working with these sort of situations as a financial advisor, not only personally, but also professionally. How do you get this conversation started, Lynn? I mean, people don't want to talk about this. This is tough, no. Right?
I actually had some clients who came in one day and we got to the point of doing estate planning and the wife just got up and left the room. And I looked at her husband and I said, where's she going? And he said, she cannot even comprehend that there could be a world without me in it. And he wasn't saying that to be boastful. He was saying that because she just could not handle that concept of being responsible for everything. So you're right, it is an extremely difficult conversation to have. But I've tried to say, let's look at this another way. Let's look at it when things are good and maybe you pick a certain time that has some positive meaning in your life. That could be an anniversary. It could be a holiday. It could be your birthday. It could be his birthday. Or in same-sex couples, his or her birthday, meaning the same sex. But whatever it is, you pick a day that has good feelings already behind it. Now, some people would say to me, well, if this thing goes sour, man, you're going to have a bad taste in your mouth for this whole every year when it comes up for your birthday, you're not going to want to deal with this. I say, I understand that. But I also think it's the way that you have the conversation that would make it successful or not. And the way I've said this to several women is how to broach the subject is to talk about a friend, fictitious or not, and just say, you know, Sally's husband died last year, and we had a lunch a couple of weeks ago, and it concerned me because she started talking about all the things that she didn't know about and how difficult it was for her to even sort through all of the stuff and find out who is their attorney, who is the person that handles their investments, the name of the person who is part of their HR program at work. You know, who do I talk to about the employee benefits and what might be available? And she was talking to me about that. And as I was listening to her, I realized I don't know any of that either. So would you be open to having a conversation with me about those kinds of things? Now, generally speaking, that's okay. Generally, you will find that a husband, usually is the case, the husband would say, yeah, I don't really want you to be in that kind of a position, so maybe we should pick a day next week and I'll get all that stuff together for you. Okay, that's fine. And most spouses do not want all the heavy details. They just want to know the big picture so that they can make a phone call to somebody when the time comes and say, I understand that I have this, this, or this. I understand that you've done this for my husband. I understand. Whatever it is, it gives you a point of reference. And that has worked successfully for many couples. So I would suggest that that's it. If you look at it from the perspective, you have a friend who you were speaking to whose husband just passed recently, it's an opportunity for you to just kind of go through the back door on this and say, I don't know what we have either. Instead of it being confrontational and saying, hey, what do we have here? I don't know.
Right. Bringing somebody like you in, though, Lynn, can you almost do that good cop, bad cop thing and say, you know, hey, my advisor knows that we need to have this conversation. Has that worked at all in kind of putting you in that light as the professional?
Usually no.
Okay,
and
good,
I'll tell you why. Yeah. It's important that you say that because some people may think that's a good idea, but then it becomes invasive. It becomes you don't trust me, and so you have to go and talk to an advisor, or we need an advisor to have this conversation, it becomes something that's not good. It has a negative connotation. However, if it is a situation where I am working with the couple, I usually require that a spouse who may be non-interested be present, if only at the time when we review the plan that was done and say, okay, now it's time to actually go through this and see what's going on. Because there's some input required by a, quote, non-interested spouse that starts a conversation about these things and opens up her eyes to what's going on. And it's nice and comforting in a passive way to know on a piece of paper what we have. So it's there without her having to ask. It's there.
The book chapter, which is chapter 8, correct?
Yes.
Has so many magnificently worded questions. And what I really liked about reading this chapter is there's a warmth about the way that Lynn writes these questions. If you are ready to have that conversation and you ask these questions, you're going to have so much of what you need. And I love how you said it at the beginning with your mother, that she knew that you had the financial stuff taken care of, so she could take care of what she needed to take care of personally, which is to grieve. There are going to be a lot of people asking you a lot of questions when your significant other passes. And mm-hmm. having those answers or those questions answered ahead of time, you said it perfectly, clear of mind, neutral time, even a happy time, I think that makes such a huge difference. What do you think about that?
The questions?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, well, I think it's a good idea. I think these questions are some of the questions that you'd want to even ask yourself, not necessarily requiring the input of a spouse, but it would be helpful. For instance, one of the biggest problems I run into in dealing with women who are widowed is the well-meaning intervention of children who tell mom where she needs to live. Because in most cases, you have the family home, which had a whole bunch of bedrooms and living rooms and dining rooms and things that are no longer necessary. And if they haven't downsized to some point, it's time for mom to do that. But then the bigger question is, where? If you have children that live in very different places on the globe, I would even say, every one of them wants you to come and live with them or not. You know, there's all kinds of interactions that go on when this happens. But I think that the first thing I say to women when they're looking at that question is, please do nothing for at least 6 months, maybe a year, because you will react to something that you may regret, and you need to take some time to sort this out. Acknowledging the fact that your brain isn't working too well right now, and you may make decisions that you later regret. So 6 months to a year, just stay put. That's the first biggie. The second thing is, if you do go somewhere else, what are you going to do for your social life? Because many women really suffer through a very difficult time when all of their friendships were with couples. And one of the saddest things I see, but it happens, is that many couples kind of fade away because she is the odd man out, so to speak. And then there are some really weird women who think that perhaps she might be going after their husbands. It is really a cultural ugliness that we have to deal with. So I say to a lot of women, you need to go and create a new set of friends. And maybe it is a widow's support group, but then for a lot of women, that keeps them in that space mentally, and that's not a good thing either. So what I'm trying to do is help them take a look at their lives and say, what are the things that I can do now that would make me feel good? Just real simple things. Maybe you're somebody who likes to knit or never learned to knit and would like to knit. It's a very passive thing, but it's a good thing. So things like that is what you want to take a look at. And then the other question is, should you live close to your children? Now, a lot of people who are aging may find that it's better to be near their children because it's easier for holidays and things like that for them to get to where they need to be rather than getting on airplanes and flying to someplace. So maybe there is an opportunity to live closer to one or all of your children. It depends on where they are. So those are the kinds of things I want women to start talking about as soon as the final expenses, burial situation, all of that is behind them. Then we get on to the lifestyle, and that is something that they have to seriously give some thought to. And I also ask them to write in a journal every day. This is what I'm thinking today. This is how I feel today. This is what I think my decision would be. And go back and take a look at that, because it could change every day, and that's okay. It's perfectly fine. That's why I say, please do not make a decision for the first 6 months about where you're going to live. I prefer it be a year.
And for some people, it will be less, and some people, it will be more. But I love that you give kind of a baseline, and you're giving people permission. Lana, I've, in dealing with end-of-life issues, there are a lot of permissions that I think if you give them ahead of time, it just makes the whole transition even easier, because there's so much that people don't want to talk about. Is there anything else besides the permission of it's okay, it's going to take you a while, that you have found is very, very beneficial to provide for a woman in the grieving process?
Well, you know, yes. And I think it's just, I don't want to set myself out as a counselor per se, a grief counselor. But the reality is, every once in a while, I will just check in with them and see how they're doing. And they have some good days and they have some bad days. And maybe what it really comes down to is just being there and listening. Because where they start to feel the pressure and the pain is a phone call I had last night from my son John, who lives in Washington, D.C. He really wants me to come down there, and he said he's talked to his siblings about it, and they all agree. But I don't know that that's really something I want to do, and I'm not happy about going to Washington, D.C. All my friends are here. So it's one of those where you just go through it, listen, and I can't make the decision for her, but I can give her some questions that might be helpful in her consideration.
Lynn, just being that welcome ear, you know, when you verbalize something, it allows you to process it differently, and knowing that somebody's listening helps with that processing. And so you don't have to be a counselor, and nor are you a grief counselor, but you can just be that trusted relationship that's there to help them process the information. All right. What are some of the closing thoughts that you have for today's podcast when it comes to starting the conversation and reducing the fear, or truly being fearless about being a widow?
I think one of the things that would make a lot of sense, if you've had that conversation with your husband and he's willing to provide you with this information that you feel you need, I would go the next step and say, how about if we get together for dinner with our lawyer? And use the word our, not your, our lawyer, our professional advisors, and those people, even if it's just on a social basis, you as the, I'm going to call it potential widow, we don't know that that's how it's going to end up, but let's just call it that. You are somebody who needs to trust your gut when it comes to dealing with these people. If, let's say, the financial advisor is somebody that you feel is talking down to you or is not including you in the conversation when it starts to get a little bit more technical, that is probably not somebody that you want to continue to deal with. And you would know that now. If it was, same with an attorney, The same with a CPA. If those people are not people that you feel comfortable with, you need to let your husband know about that. And maybe you should start talking to some other people in those fields that make you feel good. Because one thing we do know is more than 70% of widows leave their husband's advisors within the first year. So don't wait until that happens. Be aggressive about it and just go and meet these people and decide whether or not you think that you could work with them.
And with that, Lynn, thank you very much, not only for writing the book and this chapter, but for sharing your thought leadership today.
Thank you. It's been a blast, as it always is, Matt. Thanks.
If you have not subscribed to the Power of the Purse podcast, please make sure that you click that subscribe now button below. That way, every time Lynn comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. Please make sure that you check out the website. And if you have not purchased the book yet, we will make sure that the link to purchase the book is in the show notes. There's a lot of stuff in the book about fear and how to overcome that fear. Today, we talked about probably the most difficult thing to overcome, which is a fear about being a widow. So for everybody at Power of the Purse, this is Matt Hallern, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.